Today is November 6, 2013, and this is episode number 229 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a sick, sick man. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But the show must go on, right?
It must. So everyone, give Brian a big digital hug right now.
Oh, I feel it even though they haven't even heard this yet.
Yeah. Well, it's okay because our time is not linear.
It's true. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. Not in the podcast recording world.
No. Not at all. It truly is wibbly wobbly and timey wimey.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, listen, we're going to do something a little bit different today.
Okay, so that means I'm bringing you the chicken soup?
No.
Oh, good. Interns still handle that. Good.
I haven't seen – have you seen the interns?
No, that's really weird. After we sent them down to the basement last week.
Yeah, I don't know that they came up. I mean, I don't care enough to go look because it's scary down there.
Oh, you'll care – when you realize your coffee isn't showing up in the morning.
No, that's true. I will. Yeah, anyway, I haven't seen them, so no, someone else is gonna have to bring me the chicken soup, that's for sure. Yeah. But what I meant was that you and I have planned for a little bit of a different kind of show today, and
right,
different from our normal different.
Yes, because we have so many things that we want to talk about.
We've got five topics, and we didn't want to relegate any of them to rapid fire. So even though we could probably talk for a half an hour on each one of them, we're going to try to squeeze all five topics into our usual 55 to 60 minute show.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? It's a perfect plan. It's foolproof.
I know, and it's not like we ever have much to say.
No. So let's get to it.
Let's do it.
Let's knock out a softball first.
Okay. Which to you feels like a softball?
I think the Sapphire one's a softball.
All right, let's do the Sapphire.
So Apple is apparently opening a major factory in Arizona. It's one of the least things that it's going to do is actually, I'm not saying that right. One of the things that this factory is going to do is produce sapphire material. This is synthetic sapphire, with the help of a third party company.
So Apple will be making their own sapphires.
Sort of, actually. Apple is going to own the factory, and Apple is going to finance the equipment to the tune of $578 million. This is a loan to a company called GT Advanced Technologies. That loan is going to be paid back over 5 years, but Apple's basically putting up a more than a half a billion dollars up to buy all the equipment. And GTAT will own and operate that equipment outside of the course of the terms of the loan, whereas Apple will own the factory, and their job is going to be to produce sapphire material, as they call it, but basically produce these ingots of sapphire for Apple to turn around and use on their devices.
So Apple must have some serious sapphire quantity needs coming up.
I feel that the answer to that is yes. Now, currently, Apple is using, as I understand it, Apple is using sapphire to cover the camera lens.
And it's also on the Touch ID sensor.
It's protecting the Touch ID sensor, yeah. And I knew that. I saw some other folks were reporting that Apple's also using it to cover the camera. I'm assuming that that's actually correct.
Yes, that is correct.
But I don't think those two uses alone would require this kind of investment. Because, you know, Apple's it's funny, we heard about this because everybody but Apple crowed about it. The state of Arizona crowed about it, and GTAT announced it during their quarterly conference call with analysts. And this factory that Apple's building is kind of a big deal. I guess it's going to provide a couple of thousand jobs for there in Arizona where it's being opened. And I think it's going to do it's going to do more than produce this glass. Maybe they're going to process the glass. Maybe they may be doing some assembly there. I'm not really sure. Sick boy lost his train of thought.
Well, how about if I jump in with another place where I could see Apple using this? And that's on their trackpads, because they are using a glass-type coating already on the trackpads on the MacBook Pro and MacBook Air. So maybe they're planning on using their own material now instead of purchasing that from someone else.
All right. So, well, let's talk a little bit about Sapphire. So this is Sapphire. Diamonds are also artificially constructed.
Yes, I learned how that works by watching the Superman movie. He squeezed a piece of charcoal so that he could give Lois Lane a diamond.
Exactly, and that is how, you know, the synthetic diamonds, which are used in industrial uses and to a lesser extent in jewelry after they're blemished with colors. It's a different process, but the point is that synthetic sapphire is I don't know why I brought up diamonds. Anyway, the point is this: they grow it and it comes out as these big globules, which are called bules, which is it's more like an ingot. And these big bules are then cut and sliced, and that's how people use them. I don't think that sapphire would be a good covering for trackpads.
And not being a gem and mineral engineer or a glass engineer, or I've never even driven a train, although I did have them as kids. So, hey, I'm qualified to be an engineer. Nonetheless, I don't know.
I'm nodding sagely.
I'm sure you are, with your thumb and index finger on your chin. Yes. I don't know if sapphire is an appropriate material or not, because I don't know what the glass composition is that Apple's currently using on trackpads.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Sapphire is not glass. It's actual sapphire. This isn't just a trade name. This is synthetic.
Right. It's synthetic sapphire.
Synthetic sapphire.
And
it is really hard. It's 9 on a Mohs scale. That's almost as hard as a diamond. And it's extremely hard. And it's been made for decades for as a watch crystal. That's why a watch crystal is called a crystal, because it's actually this gem material.
Right.
Right. Your high-end watches are not covered with glass. They're covered with a gemstone, this synthetic sapphire, which is clear. And, so I don't think it's appropriate for trackpads. I'm not an expert, but I don't think it's appropriate for trackpads. I saw some speculation that Apple may be wanting to replace Gorilla Glass with sapphire. I don't think that's the case either.
I don't think that would be the case either, because if it's that hard, well, there's probably also – okay, Corning knows how to do glass. They've been doing the glass thing for a really long time, and Gorilla Glass is designed in such a way that while being incredibly strong, it also has enough flex so that it's not brittle.
And sapphire is not.
Yeah, sapphire is just brittle.
It's hard. It's hard. It's a hard material. So I don't think that this is for a replacement for Gorilla Glass either. And I don't think it's for trackpads. What I think is, first of all, Touch ID is going to be expanded to more devices.
I think that's a really safe bet.
they're going to use Sapphire for more camera covers. Possibly. I don't know if they're already... frankly, I don't know right now if it's already used on, say, Macs, you know, to cover the camera on all of Apple's Mac products.
I would assume not, simply because there's already that other piece of glass that covers up the whole display, and the camera's behind that.
Right, and that's certainly not Sapphire, nor will it be Sapphire.
No, that would be a bad place for Sapphire.
So what I really think this is going to be about is Apple's foray into wearables.
Ooh. That's kind of an interesting idea.
I put in the piece that I wrote about this, I said, it could be this and that. Oh, who am I kidding? It's, you know, think iWatch. And I think that Apple, I think this is about wearables. Whether or not it's the iWatch in particular is another issue, but I think this is about wearables.
I really like that idea. That's better than my trackpad idea. And that's saying a lot, because I think my trackpad idea is pretty cool.
I'm a watch guy. I love watches. I know that you know this, of course, Jeff. I don't think we've ever really mentioned it on the show. I've been fascinated by synthetic sapphire for a long time. And so when, you know, suddenly, and Jeff, you know how, of course, I tend to obsess over anything that I'm interested in.
Oh, I had not picked up on that at all.
It was so delightful that something that I had obsessed on and learned about years ago, unrelated to Apple, suddenly came into play.
Isn't it awesome when that happens?
In fact,
the downside is that totally validates to you that whole obsessive thing.
Oh, yeah, I didn't need any validation. I'm okay being crazy.
Oh, okay.
I'm totally okay being crazy. I had to accept that a long time ago. Dave Hamilton kind of helped me along those lines a long time ago.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
So the point is that if you want to see what a Buell of Sapphire looks like, I've got it in the article on this topic that's in the show notes.
Yeah, and it's actually a really nice Buell.
It's very, very, very interesting. All right, so it's big. Oh, we should also mention that it's a big deal that Apple is doing this in the States.
Oh, that's right. Apple has,
Apple's been buying equipment for companies. Like, you know, so one of the things that Apple does is they'll invent manufacturing processes. They'll then build or buy the machinery to make that happen. And they'll own that machinery that is operated by their component suppliers. You know, and this helps Apple. This helps Apple because Apple maintains control, right? They have precisely the quality that they want. It helps the companies, the component suppliers, because Apple assumes the risk of buying this equipment. You know, making a major investment in equipment is a risk, especially when you're dealing with Apple as your customer.
Oh, boy, howdy.
And, of course, that in turn helps Apple secure the best prices possible because the component suppliers have a lot of their risk mitigated. Right? This is the one thing that Apple uses its huge cash hoards for. And so now this has been going on for years in Asia. But we don't often learn about many of the details because those companies aren't subject to the same disclosure laws that we have here in the States. We're learning about this one because, A, the governor was excited about it, and the governor of Arizona, mm-hmm. and, B, the GTAT had to disclose it because it materially impacts their business and they're a publicly traded company.
Right.
Right. So we're actually seeing some of these details. But now this is happening in the States. This is a further investment by Apple in bringing manufacturing back to the States. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, it's actually cool because Apple has been saying they want to see jobs in the United States, manufacturing in the United States. And they're doing more than just talking. They're actually taking action to make that happen.
Yes, Dave Hamilton is asking me to put together a photo gallery for him. He doesn't know I'm recording, and so I missed everything you said. I was replying to him.
That's okay. When you said yes,
yes,
your yes was perfect.
It sounded like I knew what you were talking about.
It totally did.
Well, Well, and I'm sure that you did, so.
Yeah, so so we're good. So we don't even need to go back over that. And as a matter of fact, you don't even need to edit. No one's going to know.
That's fantastic. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. We are a good team.
Yeah, boy, howdy. So, okay, so that was our softball.
That's the softball. Yeah, let's move on. We're already behind schedule.
Of course we are.
Well, let's talk about something exciting. Let's talk about the iPad Air.
Okay.
You got one.
I did. I went and picked one up on Friday. I know.
Son of a gun.
I know, but I did have to get up so that I could do my order for in-store pickup at 1 a.m. And everyone knows how much I need my beauty sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. But you did it, you got it, and you love it.
I do. I love it. And I wasn't sure how much I was going to love it. I knew I was going to appreciate having it because I'm coming from an iPad 3 or third gen iPad to the iPad Air. And it was the difference was immediate for me. Like just picking it up, my third gen iPad suddenly felt like this ridiculously heavy metal and glass slab. And the performance improvement was noticeable immediately as well.
Now, I did a big spec comparison between the iPad 2, 3, 4, and iPad Air.
And I think you're partly wrong with your results.
Well, and then what I said was, if you have an iPad 2, upgrading is a no-brainer. It's not even a decision. It's not even a contest.
I agree completely.
And that if you have an iPad 3 or 4, that if money is an object, if money is no object, you should absolutely update to the iPad Air and sell or hand me down the older one. But if money is an object, that this wasn't such an incredible upgrade that you had no choice but to do so.
And I partially disagree with you.
Okay.
So my feeling is, for the third and fourth gen iPads, if you have a third gen, this is an easy upgrade as well. It's the change between the iPad 2 and the Air and the third gen and the Air. It's not quite as dramatic, but it was still dramatic. If you have a fourth gen iPad, I don't see it as big of a deal because it did get a processor upgrade in addition to its Lightning port, the fourth gen did. So it's not as big of a jump. So my feeling is third gen iPad and lower, this is a no-brainer upgrade.
And so I haven't even touched the Air. I know that it's a good machine. I know that it's a good device. I would if money was no object to me, I would absolutely get one. The lightness, the smaller size, the faster processor in particular to me would be rather interesting because I'm using an iPad 3. But the thing is the reason why I don't think that people who have a year and a half old iPad 3 should feel like they're missing out is because the iPad 3 can do everything that the iPad Air can do.
It's pretty much yes.
It's if you have an iPad 3 or an iPad 4, and you've never thought to yourself, "Man, this thing is slow," or you know, "Man, these graphics just aren't quite good enough. I need better graphics," or you know, "I'm doing these scientific calculations and they just aren't fast enough." You know, if you haven't been thinking those things, it turns out that the iPad 3 or 4 will continue to be a good device for you.
Well, okay, using that logic, which is totally valid logic, there's lots of people out there that have no need to upgrade from a first-gen iPad.
Well, you know, but first-gen and iPad 2, the compelling thing is for any of the subsequent devices is the Retina display.
Yes. Yeah, the Retina display is a beautiful thing. And okay, so here's what it comes down to for me. How valuable is your time? And this is a rhetorical question. I'm not asking you to throw out a dollar value right now. I'll ask later. But how valuable is your time? And are you using this as a business productivity tool? Or is this just like a supplemental device, or you just really enjoy having an iPad, so you have one? And if the answer is this is a critical business tool, this is a productivity device for me, my time is very valuable, then it's worth looking at upgrading to the iPad Air.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're looking at it from a business standpoint as well, there's a very significant possibility that you're looking at either a write-off or your company's buying, either way. I mean, like I said, the issue here is not whether or not the Air is good, because it is. It's great. It's a great device. It's the best tablet that's ever been made.
I think it is the best tablet that's ever been made. And
but that's not the issue.
The issue is that you're wrong. And I'm right. Okay, so
the issue is whether or not money is an object for you.
And money is always a key component in whether or not you're going to buy a new device, because if you don't have the money to do it, well, then you don't buy it. Okay, so in the case of the iPad Air, and I have to be a little bit lenient on you because you haven't had a chance to play with one yet.
Yeah, I'm speaking from ignorance.
And after playing with one, and keep in mind, I did buy one without ever seeing it. And I took it out of the box, and I was taking a leap of faith that it was going to be that much better for me than my iPad 3 or third-gen iPad. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it is. The difference is palpable. And when you add in the substantially improved performance overall with the thinner body that balances better in your hand and cutting almost half a pound of weight off of the whole package, I can't imagine not having done the upgrade. When I'm running around at a conference, at a trade show, or some other event where I need to have my iPad with me the whole time, that half a pound is going to be a huge thing.
Fair enough.
And really, when I got the third-gen iPad, I thought, man, we're getting close to a point where I can actually go to events with just an iPad. And with the iPad Air, I feel like now it's up to app developers to make that happen, because Apple gave us the hardware so that I can actually go to many of the events that you and I end up at and not even take a laptop.
Also, fair enough. So a couple of closing notes. One is that as developers have time to take advantage of the new 64-bit A7 processor and develop apps, release apps that do take advantage of the new architecture, the upgrade case will shift towards compelling even if you like your iPad 3. It'll shift more closer to it.
I agree. For people that are on the fence right now, maybe go ahead and wait for a couple months and see what developers give us.
See what the iPad Pro looks like this spring.
You know, there was
what can of worms? Hello.
Oh man, yeah.
All right, we actually have to move on.
I know we always have to move on. There's so much more to say, and what do you want to hit next?
Let's get dirty and talk politics.
Did it just get hot in here when you said let's get dirty?
So Tim Cook wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, and boy, was that something that was out of character historically for Apple.
Very much so, but Tim Cook, despite having said that nothing will change, has changed a lot of things at Apple, many of them for the better.
Well, to be fair, Apple over the course of the years has often said one thing to the public and then done something else. So in that sense, nothing has changed.
It's true. His column argued for the passage, and I forget the name of the bill. I don't have it in front of me. I meant to bring that up. Do you know it?
Equality, everyone that don't be mean to people because of their sexual preference.
It basically makes it illegal to fire someone for equal protection to sexual preference.
Right. Yes. So federal equal rights protection.
Yes. And Tim Cook made this argument. He said that this has been good for we have a very open culture at Apple, and by protecting people's rights to have a sexual orientation and not asking them to check that at the door allows people to be their whole selves, as he put it, at work, and by doing so they can be their best selves, and that this has been good for Apple, and we encourage passage of this bill, so that the way I read it was so that we can put this business behind us.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he said. And one of the points that kind of floated out of that whole piece for me, and this isn't something I recall Tim saying directly, but the idea was, for some people, the only place they can really feel comfortable being themselves is when they go to work at Apple, and because they have to be secretive about who they are around
other people.
There are certainly
other companies that are as open as Apple.
Oh, absolutely. But what I mean is there's a lot of people out there that probably when they go to work, if it's an environment that's like Apple, that's the only place they get to feel comfortable being open about who they are. And that's pretty sad when you have to go to work to truly be yourself. You should be able to be who you are everywhere.
I'm going to take issue with your reasoning on this. I think that there are far more people who can't be themselves at work and they can only be themselves at home.
And you're missing my meaning here, because you're absolutely right on that. My point is, it's horribly sad that there are people that even at home they don't get to be themselves. And if they're lucky enough to have a job at a place like Apple or another company that has the same policies and philosophies, that they have to go to work to finally have that comfort. They don't get that at home. It's just a sad thing.
Now, Apple has gotten involved in related issues before. Apple gave, I think, $100,000 to the to a campaign fighting Proposition 8 in California.
Yes, and they were open about doing that.
And they were open about it. They actually announced it. And Apple has made other pro-equality statements. Apple has openly supported gay marriage. I don't know if we should note, but I'm going to note that Tim Cook himself is gay. He's never made that an issue, to his credit. And, you know, that's never been an issue with the way he runs Apple, or even the way he's made these statements. The statements have always been along the lines of, we believe that this is better for our employees.
Yeah, and I like that it's about making a friendlier workplace.
Yes. And now, so he wrote this column for the Wall Street Journal, which is very well known for being having a very conservative editorial page, and for having largely conservative news coverage, although I actually disagree with that. I think that their news coverage is, and I hate to use this term because of Fox News, but I think the Wall Street Journal has done a very good job of having fair and balanced news coverage. It's just they tend to cover topics that are of more interest to the conservative world because it's a business newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But the editorial page is known for being very conservative. The conservative movement is largely anti-gay equality, anti-gay marriage, which is fascinating in that it that runs directly in contradiction with the notion that government should get out of our lives, but whatever.
Yeah, you're right. There's a little bit of a logical disconnect there.
Yeah, there's a logical disconnect in a lot of the a lot of the social conservative issues, in my opinion. By the way, if you're offended by that, sorry.
If you're offended by that, be glad that you're living in a place where we can say what we want and you can say what you want, and it's all okay.
Yeah, fair enough. So I read through, and I know that you didn't because you didn't want to go on Tilt, but I read through the comments on the Wall Street Journal's page. And the thing that struck me, the thread that struck me the most was this subtext, this current of, well, who will think about the bigots? That somehow equal protection of for homosexuals, gay, lesbian, trans, bisexual, and transgender, LGBT. Am I getting all those right?
Yep, you got them all in there.
That this is somehow an imposition on bigots. And there's another logical disconnect there. So,
you know,
I just wanted to bring that up.
It's a problem for people when an idea is presented that's contrary to whatever their philosophy is, whether it's religious, political, it doesn't matter. That a lot of people have a very hard time embracing ideas that run contrary to what they already believe.
Yeah, but who will think about the bigots, Jeff?
That there will be people out there that will think of them too. No one will be left behind.
There is another thread, a thread that I've got a little more sympathy, if not empathy, for, and that's that that Apple was able to make this choice on its own because there weren't any regulations preventing Apple from doing so, and that it's good for Apple, but other companies should be free to do what they want.
Well, I have a problem with that. And the problem is that if we go back a few decades,
mm-hmm.
the government had to say that that companies could not discriminate against potential employees based on race or religion.
Or mixed marriage.
That's right.
Or unwed mothers. Or people of various religions. You know, it was once upon a time quite legal and even seen as right in this country to be able to fire people for things that had nothing to do with their job performance, for being black or being Asian or
being pregnant
being pregnant, being unwed, being in a mixed marriage,
being Jewish,
Catholic, being Jewish, being
varied from whatever the norm of that business felt was appropriate.
Right. And quite frankly, I think that we are better off having put those things behind us. And I think that including putting homosexuality as a fireable offense behind us, I think that's a fine thing too.
As do I. Now, for the people that say that Apple made this decision on their own and we're better off letting everyone else do the same thing. Apple was bound by the laws that prohibit them from discriminating based on race, religion, and all of that. So that argument doesn't hold up for me.
It doesn't hold up for me either. I said sympathy in that. I understand the libertarian argument. I usually don't agree with the strict libertarian interpretation of the world, but at least I understand it. I do not understand people who think that their religious biases should somehow be the law of the land. I've got a huge problem with that, and that's not even looking at the logical disconnect with that particular. I'm sorry. Now I'm going to go on to religion. Let's not do that.
Yeah. What I think we should do before we end up down a huge political and religious rat hole, let's pick a different topic and go on to that now.
Okay. Pages. Pages and I work.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So Apple released their new iWorks apps. And for people that have been using these apps for quite a while.
And iLife, I might add.
Oh, yes. And iLife. Yes. Kind of a shock because there's a lot there that's gone. Wow, that sounds really wrong.
Yeah, there's a lot not there.
There's a lot not there, yes.
And we're talking about stuff that used to be there.
And stuff that Apple did not deal with gracefully when they pulled it out of the new version. So if you have, say, a Pages 09 document and you open it up in Pages 5.0, the new Pages, if you used features that are not available in the new version of Pages, your document breaks.
Like what? Like images and footnotes, for instance?
Yes. Footnotes and headers can no longer have images. And
which means, though, that – I mean, so when you're opening these old documents, they get converted to the new file format, and suddenly your stuff's gone.
Right. And because they use OS X's built-in autosave feature, they will promptly overwrite your original file with a new broken one. Yeah. How about linked text boxes? Those are gone.
So there's all these things that are gone, bizarrely. And the argument for what Apple has done is kind of similar to what happened with iMovie. Now, I think,
and with Final Cut Pro 10.
Yeah, you and I talked about this in a previous show.
I don't remember what I had for lunch, so we could talk about it again, and it'll be all new for me.
Oh, that's I think you had soup.
It was bad. It was horrible.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
It's the soup you made?
No, it's not the soup I made. That's magical. No, this was
good.
Like one of the what do they call them? The Asian noodle bowl things that you can get at the grocery store, and it was just.
I didn't know that's what you were doing. All right.
Oh, well, man, it was. So anyhow, I haven't had lunch yet. That's why I don't remember what I had, because I blocked out the horrible one spoonful that I ate.
Fair enough. Apple, train of thought, gone. All these features that are gone. Oh, the argument for what Apple has done is that Apple needed to bring all of these apps into 64-bit architecture and to unify them across iOS and OS X.
Right.
And that to do so, we essentially had to downgrade the desktop apps to be compatible with the iOS apps so that then there's a new floor from which to build.
Right. And so essentially what Apple did was they took the iOS versions of Pages, Numbers, and Keynote and ported them to the Mac.
Yeah, well, we don't know that they ported it that way.
Well,
but it's we know that the feature set was built to be the same.
Yes, it was built to be the
same.
That's
the one thing that we know.
I'm going to say they ported it just because I'm okay making a stand, and someone's going to prove me wrong later, and I'll say, look, I had a really crappy lunch. Get off my back.
Well, I don't think Apple would port. All right, let's forget about that.
But
and get off my back. Everyone has been unhappy. No one has been happy about this. Because, I mean, we're talking. I mean, for one thing, there was no warning. There was no, like, by the way, if you install this, it's free. So, you know, there's that. But if you install this, you're going to be kind of screwed if you used all these features.
Right. Well, the saving grace there is that Apple, when the installer runs, it does not overwrite the old versions of the iWork and iLife apps.
Right, but you
oh no, that's not true.
Getting...
It does overwrite the old iLife apps, not the iWork apps.
Oh, okay, all right, that makes sense. And so, this document that Apple released today, for one thing, acknowledged the problem, which is, you know, a shocker. B, promised to fix it, and then C, actually laid out the features that are going to be re-added to Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, and also included some instructions on. How to revert individual documents back to a previous version.
You know, I'm glad they did this. However, I would have been happier about it if they had done it before the new apps rolled out, so people would know.
And, yes.
Yeah, I knew.
Like we knew that iMovie, the new version of iMovie, we knew that was a completely new thing.
Yes.
Right. It was shown to us as we got this completely new thing.
Yeah. And they said, we threw out the code and started over or something to that effect. So we knew it was a brand new product that just shared the name of what had come before.
Right. And you can say the same thing to a lesser extent about Final Cut Pro 10. Although that still did catch some people off guard, but Apple quickly addressed that, and now they're quickly addressing this. And so they've got this big long list of features that are coming back, most of which I think address most of the complaints, and they said that they're going to do it over updates during the next 6 months.
So what that tells me is that as they add these features in over time, they will be adding them in cross-platform. Because if they don't, we lose the file format parity between devices.
Yes. Cross-platform to iOS to OS 10.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I believe that is precisely what they're going to do. And so we'll eventually be at a good place with these apps. I'm glad to see that Apple did this. It was a solid move. It could have been handled better.
It could have been handled a lot better.
But this is going a long way towards correcting that bad handling.
There are a couple things I did not see on that list, and I'm hoping that it's simply because Apple didn't detail everything. But I did not see Mail Merge. That's a critical thing to have. I did not see Apple Script, and that concerns me. Apple has been...
Keynote's going to have improved Apple Script support.
Well, okay, that's
not
a start.
It's not listed in Pages.
But Pages basically has no Apple Script now. And Apple has been stripping Apple Script support out of a lot of applications. And over the years, they have pared down what you can do at the system level with it. And I have this horrible feeling that one of these versions of OS X that comes out in the next couple of years, it just simply won't have Apple Script at all. And then and Apple won't say anything. It just won't be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That would be the way it would happen.
Yeah. And sadly, there are people that I know that if they don't have Apple Script and they need to update to a newer version of their operating system for whatever reason, they will have to look to another platform.
Yeah.
That'll be a sad loss. So anyhow, yes, I am not pleased with what Apple took out. Although... to be fair, when I look at Pages as an application that someone would be using for the very first time, totally new to Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, it's fine.
Is it good?
It's good as a simple document design tool, and it's nice. Being able to drop graphics in so easily and to be able to manipulate them so easily and to have a nice selection of templates, although not as many as were there before, so that you can easily make that family holiday newsletter or whatever it is that you need to make. Today, it is a perfectly fine tool for the first-time user. For everyone else that's been using it, it's a major step backwards.
Well, that unfortunately makes sense. Anything else to say on this one?
Nope, because I know we are on a tight schedule.
We are, and we have one more topic, and that topic would be the I'm going to miss the name of it now. Apple's report on government requests.
Yes.
And so this was a report that Apple released on Monday. It detailed as far as Apple could the number of requests for customer information that Apple has received from U.S. government sources and from foreign governments. Although those have to go through the U.S. government too. And this is, of course, this is part of the continued fallout of the Edward Snowden leaks about what the NSA is doing to listen into just about everything we do.
Yes, and looking at the report, there were a few things that to me were appalling, And the first was that our federal government says, look, you can't talk about what information we're making you give us.
It's like they think they're as cool as Fight Club.
Yeah, they think they're as cool as Fight Club, yes. And then they said, well, but for what we'll let you talk about, it has to be obfuscated. So you have to use numbers that are so broad. Oh, and by the way, there's a lot of stuff we just won't let you talk about anyhow. So even with these massively broad sweeping numbers, like you have to round off to thousands.
Yeah, basically Apple could only reveal this stuff in units of 1,000.
Yeah. And you look at those numbers, and then you look at the numbers compared to other countries.
Yeah. Holy For instance, crap. The communist dictatorship of China that has the great firewall of China governing what comes into and out of the country on the interwebs, right? China has requested customer data from Apple six times. Six times.
And that's in the last year, right?
And actually, the first half of 2013.
Okay, so
January 1st to June 30th.
So they're averaging one request a month.
Yes. And, you know, in comparison, Australia, 74. Germany, 93. The UK, 127. Spain, 102. I don't know what the Spaniards are all uptight about. Poland, 1. New Zealand, 3. You know. By the way, and like countries that weren't I've got the full chart in the piece, and we have that in the show notes.
Yes, but we do.
Countries that aren't listed didn't make requests, according to Apple. That's what Apple said, at least. Singapore, which is also known for its extraordinary control over the populace, 23. Apple, 1,000 to 2,000. I'm sorry. United States, 1,000 to 2,000. You know,
Now tell me again, how many did China have?
Six.
Yeah.
Six.
And the United States had upwards of 2,000.
Russia, 1. And I mean, and there are all kinds of reasons. This. For one thing, all these other countries they're not in the, I mean, obviously they're not the U.S. and Apple is not a U.S. company. So that's, you know, that's going to make the difference. That's going to be part of the reason why there's all these differences. And for another thing, there's various diplomatic channels that have to be gone through. And, you know, and this is probably the big one. The NSA doesn't have to ask permission, doesn't have to ask anybody for please. NSA can just do it at once because of the way that we have, you know, in the supposed land of the free, structured our laws. But Russia or China has to ask. They've got to ask the U.S. We want this stuff.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right? So, you know,
it doesn't justify the NSA actions. And unfortunately, there is no justification. And I'm not saying that, like, there's no justification for this, but there's literally no justification being offered.
There's yes. And don't get me wrong. I am not – I believe in the notion of national security. I believe in the notion of stopping terrorism and finding the bad guys. What I have a problem with personally is with the notion of – reasonable suspicion, or wait, what's the correct term?
Probable cause.
Probable cause, thank you. Probable cause and warrants. I happen to believe in that aspect of the way our country was set up. You've got to have warrants when the police want to do stuff. And, you know, the NSA largely, it's a mess. But the other aspect of this is this gag order. What's this notion that, gag orders are imposed with most of these searches where you're not allowed – the person who receives – say it's a library. Librarian is not allowed to tell anyone that he or she received a warrant requesting information on the activities of a certain person.
Right.
Gag orders in the land of the free. doesn't jive with me.
No, it doesn't fit well. And the weird, or to me, weird thing about a gag order is that if someone says, hey, did you get a warrant for this person or information about this person? If you didn't, your answer is no. And if you did, you can't say, which means yes. Now they know that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And to that end, actually, TechCrunch, I think TechCrunch found this first. Apple actually included a concept called a warrant canary in this report, because the very last line of the report, now I didn't note this in my piece, so I'll be honest, I didn't even realize it. So we're going to link to the TechCrunch piece on this. Apple said that it had received no Section 215 requests under the Patriot Act. Which means they haven't, because they can only – yeah, if they had, as Jeff just said, if they had received a request, they're not allowed to talk about it. And so this is called a warrant canary, because in subsequent reports, if Apple omits having any information about having received a request under Section 215 of the U.S. Patriot Act.
That means that they most likely actually have received a request.
Yes, exactly. Which, you know, I mean, yeah. And Section 215 is like this really broad request where the NSA can basically request information that may pertain to an investigation, which basically means that they can get anything and everything that they want.
Yeah, they can ask for anything they want, period.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's just – it's overbroad. It's – frankly, it's un-American. And that's my big beef with this. So Apple – part of Apple's subtext in this report, and this was the angle that I took in our coverage, is that Apple took the opportunity twice to point out that Apple's business model is not predicated on the notion of collecting personal data.
And that's actually an important thing.
Yeah, so let me actually read that. Perhaps most important, our business does not depend on collecting personal data. We have no interest in amassing personal information about our customers. We protect personal conversations by providing end-to-end encryption over iMessage and FaceTime, which is something that third-party researchers have quibbled over. We do not store location data, map searches, or SIR requests in any identifiable form. And then in another section, this is later in the same report, unlike many other companies dealing with requests for customer data from government agencies, Apple's main business is not about collecting information. And Apple didn't name Google, Facebook, or Yahoo, or you know, even
Microsoft, Apple's because they have Bing.
Microsoft because of Bing, you know, and Microsoft, of course, is a partner through Rockstar. Apple didn't name any of these other guys, but to me, it was pretty clear that, you know, like, look, if you're worried about what the government is requesting, go ahead and think about who you're doing business with in the first place.
Yeah, and that's actually an important thing to note, because if your information is that critical, maybe you do need to be thinking about who's holding on to it for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I predicted in my piece that the mainstream wouldn't touch this aspect of the report, and I was right, and that makes me sad. All the mainstream reports were kind of focused more on the fact that Apple has simply issued the report. But, you know, I really wish Apple does not do as good a job as it should of talking up the fact that their business isn't selling us.
You know, that's a really good point. Yeah, their business is selling to us, not selling us.
Right. I put in the piece, I said, not stated is that other large tech companies like Google, Facebook, and Yahoo and others have business models entirely dependent on amassing portfolios of personal information about we, the product.
And I loved your use of the words "we the product," because it's just a wonderful play on "we the people."
Thank you kindly. I appreciate that. So anyway, it's interesting to see Apple do this. They're being very proactive about this. Apple this report also made the case that Apple is lobbying for greater transparency. And Apple's not alone in that. Google, to their great credit, Google, Microsoft, Facebook. To me, actually, it's been Google and Facebook and Apple have been the biggest voices in this. They're all asking for the laws to be changed to allow them to be more transparent with their customers about these kinds of requests. Because what's happening right now is that, especially for Apple, the worry about this is worse than the actual issue itself. You know, Apple really hasn't received all that many requests for information compared to the kinds of requests that that Google and Facebook get. And, you know, Apple wants to be able to make that point, but all of these companies want to be able to make that point. All of these companies want to be able to be more upfront about what they do and don't do in accordance with the law.
Yeah. And it's when you're in a position where everything is kept secret, even when maybe it doesn't need to be, then you start creating suspicion and doubt, and that leads to bigger problems.
It does. It very much does. Very much does. All right. Well, I think we actually did it. I think we managed to go through these topics.
We blasted through everything, and we still have a couple minutes left to do our wrap-up and be at an hour.
Yeah. I think we're actually going to come out in a couple of minutes under. That's good.
Yeah.
Yes. I see a headline flashing from New York Times Twitter. Prices IPO at $26 a share, valuing company at $18 billion. It's apparently breaking news.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. So look at that. You heard it here first because, like us, you don't have linear time.
I like it. Take us out.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamm at both places. And hop on over to the iTunes store and give us a rating on our podcast. We love it when you do that.
Indeed. Although I fear some of the ratings after this particular episode. You can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. It's Brian with a Y. I'm Brian Chaffin over at app.net. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, the basis by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We will see you online at the Mac Observer.